coming up on Path to Zero.
Houston needed to be not just the energy capital of the world, but also this epicenter for energy transition.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, President and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello and welcome to Path to Zero. Houston has long been known as the energy capital of the world, and today it's playing a central role in shaping what the energy transformation looks like. Sophia Cunningham is the executive director of the Houston Energy Transition Initiative. HETI is focused on driving innovation in carbon capture, hydrogen, and industrial decarbonization to meet rising energy needs while reducing emissions. Sophia, so glad to have you today at Path to Zero, our special Houston CERAWeek edition. Thanks for being on Path to Zero.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Tucker. Thanks for having me.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about. I know you're in the middle of so much of this CERAWeek stuff, but you come to us as the executive director of the Houston Energy Transition Initiative, hereafter known as HETI, right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you do there, what they do, and how you factor into this energy world.
Yeah, so first I'll give a little context on our kind of parent organization. That's the Greater Houston Partnership. And the partnership is really three organizations that one day combined into one. And so it's the Economic Development Organization for a 12-county footprint of the Houston region. That's the Houston MSA plus a couple other counties. We kind of talk about it as a rubber band that expands and contracts a little bit depending on what the issue we're working on. We're also the international trade group, so we're focused on not only attracting business domestically here to Houston, but also international firms.
And would that all include the ship channel too as well?
Yes, yeah. Definitely. And then third, we are also the Chamber of Commerce, so they're the principal business organization for the Houston region. And in a lot of other jurisdictions, that economic development group is part of the local government. We are different. We are privately funded based on dues from the business community. And it's been a great model for us to be able to think in a long-term fashion about where does this economy need to go and how can we best support its growth over time. So that's a little bit about the Greater Houston Partnership. The Houston Energy Transition Initiative, which I'm a part of, or HETI, was founded in 2021 by the chairman of the board of the Greater Houston Partnership at the time. His name's Bobby Tudor. He founded Tudor Pickering and Holt Company. He's a longtime investment banker, very experienced and knowledgeable in the energy industry. And he basically started the initiative on a principle that Houston needed to be not just the energy capital of the world, but also this epicenter for energy transition. And that over time, we're going to think about, you know, the incumbent industry is incredibly important. We're going to need oil and gas for a long, long time to come. But at the same time, we need to continue to diversify our energy mix and develop new value chains. And Houston is the greatest place to do that. So that was kind of the driving force behind the initiative. And to this day, it's kind of evolved into a very strong coalition led by industry, which is how we typically like to do things at the partnership. We think it's important when business is setting the direction and the strategy. And then we've pulled in universities that are in the Houston area. We've pulled in academic organizations, NGOs, really a wide coalition that's all dedicated to this idea of solving the dual challenge, which is that the world continues to need more energy from all types of resources. At the same time, we also have a responsibility and an opportunity to think about lowering emissions and to get us on a good, sustainable path in that regard.
It's a great segue to my next question, because I would say through the Biden administration, at least, it was all about emissions and sustainability. Trump comes in, drill, baby, drill, which even as a member of the oil and gas industry, we didn't, you know, it's about finance, it's about markets. But really, I would say the last couple of years, there's just been no conversation around sustainability emissions. Do you see that changing again? And your investments, you're very much focused about the clean energy, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So I say we're about all of it, affordable, reliable, lower emissions.
In that order?
I would say so. Yeah. It's all important. It's all needed. We think about it a little in a couple of different ways. So number one, our members plan on a long-term basis. So they're thinking about long-term growth and how they're going to continue to fuel their companies for the future. And the low carbon value chain development is a part of that story. At the same time, we also think about it in terms of Houston's long-term economic prosperity and growth. And what we've seen over time is that the incumbent oil and gas industry continues to mature and consolidate. It's a lot about efficiency. How can they continue to acquire assets or companies that position them strategically for the future? But also, how do they develop and capture efficiencies in that space? And the way we've talked about it a little bit is that the new company formation in that space is just not going to be the same amount of growth for the next 10 years that we've seen in the last 10 or so years. You know, the shale revolution was hugely beneficial to Houston. We've had a huge build out in the pet chem space, big build out in pipeline capacity, all of the key parts that make energy systems move and work. But at the same time, we're also reaching a new stage where we need to think about how do we develop new companies here. And for us, we see that particularly in the low carbon value chain.
And does that, so give us an example of that. Again, still energy providers mm-hmm. as much as anything. So would that give an example of maybe what's a new technology in the low carbon value chain?
Yeah. So I'll give you a couple of examples. So Schlumberger, for instance, is a really interesting, you know, traditional oil field services company, but they are also developing and constructing the racks that will serve Davis data centers now, because it's a lot of the same skills of welding metals together and developing that infrastructure in a way that's scalable and repeatable across a large customer base. And so that's one area where we're seeing growth, is companies are thinking about, maybe they've traditionally serviced oil and gas, but they're thinking about how do they grow and capture demand in the data center and AI race, which for us is a national imperative, and we want Houston to be a big part of that story. The other ways that they're thinking about it too is applying some of the same principles that we have in, say, chemical engineering to just new challenges. So, you know, chemical engineers, this is the largest concentration of chemical engineers in the world, are in Houston. And they can develop new membrane technology that goes into the process integration of all of the petrochemical facilities that we have here that can, you know, either apply things like carbon capture use and storage or, you know, advanced efficiencies, new synthetic fuels, all different types of ways of creating molecules and electrons.
Interesting. So clearly the center of big corporations, I mean, and so many more of them coming with their headquarters
yep.
to Texas regularly now. I see, as I discuss this, a lot of people find the solutions are going to come from entrepreneurial small companies. I would argue the practical applications of those solutions are clearly going to come from the big companies. You talked about mm-hmm. a couple of innovations. I can think today about geothermal. Geothermal is really going to advance on the techniques from that we've learned from hydraulic fracturing.
Exactly.
Do you have a particular position? Is this about large multinational companies, or is this about small innovative companies and universities and incubators? Who's got the solutions?
So I'd say it's both. We count about 22 centers of research and development that are here in Houston, which is, you know, everything from kind of research and development in the traditional sense within a corporation to some of the larger more ecosystem-enabling institutions. So we want both. I'd say we're having successes in both areas. We've got 21 coming up to 23 Fortune 500 energy companies that are headquartered in Houston. So that's a huge help to have that, really that section of the industry that knows how to bring technologies to scale all day, every day. The second piece of that, like you said, is the truly startup entrepreneurial community. And that's something that we've seen grow over time. We now count about 350 startups in the energy and climate tech space here in Houston, 4,200 energy firms overall. So growing that new company formation is really, really important to our longer term economic success. We've found that of the startup community, there's a program within the federal government called ARPA-E that invests in early stage energy breakthrough disruptive technologies. They've invested about $85 million in the last 15 years in Houston-based companies, not universities, but just the companies, more in the universities. And over time, in that time, that has resulted in companies that have a valuation of about $2 billion now and over 950 employees. And so as you add some of those smaller company formation up over time, you can also start to replace some of those consolidated jobs that we're seeing in some of the incumbent sector. And so for us, it's a view of creating economic impact, but also job creation.
You sit here in the home of petrochemical. I'll start there. Mm-hmm. Do you see a role where plastic is important in 50 years?
Absolutely.
Plastic doesn't go away. For all of its bad attributes, it doesn't go away.
Yeah, I mean, that's a debate that gets had quite a bit, and it's certainly, unfortunately, alive and well in Houston of groups that have started to protest plastics. And I think it's just, my view is that it's hard for people to fully grasp how much plastics touch our lives for the better. I mean, the development of plastic food packaging has dramatically increased our ability to access food. It's the reason you can have blueberries in your oatmeal every morning all year long. And it's also in our medical field, right, and just every facet of life, it enables life. So I think we need to tell that story a little bit better. I think plastics are going to continue to be critically important as we think about the development over time, and we just want to make sure that all of those facilities here in Houston stay active, stay running, because they supply a huge number of jobs, thousands of jobs in the region.
Yeah. So let's kind of work through that. The other piece is the oil and gas segment.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue, from being on the inside, the oil and gas segment has done a magnificent job of reducing carbon emissions, both unintended methane releases, that kind of, but also mm-hmm. just made operational changes, better, fractionating liquids. I mean, they just made major strides. Yet, we still use the same carbon values for natural gas or for propane or for butane, all those NGL streams. They don't really talk about their improvements, and they don't scientifically debate it to say the oil and gas of 2025 is different than the oil and gas was of 1950.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get them to be more involved to tell the story and defend their turf and talk about the positive things they're doing to make their products more appropriate for today's environment?
Yeah. So I think they do try to tell the story. I think it can be a little challenging if you are firm A and you're talking about the absolute emissions reduction or whatever basis you put that on, as well as your methane intensity reductions. I mean, I think that can just be a challenging story to tell because it gets perceived in the general public sometimes as being greenwashing or not enough or whatever the issue might be.
Yeah, but in this fact, it's not greenwashing. It's actually
a
significant step down in carbon.
I completely agree. And so one of the things that we've tried to do to help at HETI is kind of aggregate the commitments that our member companies have made over time. And what we've found is since 2017, our member companies have invested about $95 billion in lower carbon technologies. That doesn't necessarily mean it's just, clean green or whatever. It's how are they reducing the carbon intensity of their existing assets and operations. And we found about, 20-something percent in reduction in emissions intensity and about 55% reduction in methane emissions intensity. And so those are big strides that we've made as an industry. There's still more to do in terms of, you know, and that's where you kind of see this whole new discussion around carbon accounting coming into play of how do we have standardized methods that are really reach all of the product level into carbon intensity standards and communicate that in a way that's uniform and easily understandable. Because, you know, the way some people talk about it is at some point we could get to a point where you pick up something off of a shelf and you can just see what the carbon intensity is on the packaging, much like you would a nutrition facts label. So it takes time and it's complicated, but we're getting there.
It is complicated. And it's something I do think our industry needs to do much better is tell that story, not because I don't want to have any greenwashing, but because they are making significant improvements. Mm-hmm. I come from the pipeline industry where we used to only use natural gas compressors for our pipelines. Now, many places they use electric motors because mm-hmm. it was better.
Yep.
Not better for the pipeline company, better for the environment. And I just think those are good examples of those stories we need to tell. I asked about the Houston Ship Channel earlier because we, here in Houston, CERAWeek, where we're really talking about the energy complex, clearly there's a cloud going on in the Middle East where a lot of, day-to-day upheaval in oil and gas prices, mm-hmm. the president waives the Jones Act, 60 days, which is not enough to do much, but how do you see the waiver of the Jones Act impacting the oil and gas exports out of Houston Ship Channel to American ports? Do you see that having any impact? Are your members talking about that?
We haven't heard too much on that specific issue yet. I think time will tell. At the same time, though, you know, we are seeing tremendous value and movement for the products that are leaving this port. And so it's the number one port in foreign tonnage. Will continue to be, it's been that for many years and will continue in that same path. And, you know, this issue that we're having geopolitically just brings that affordability and reliability issue back front and center. And then we just have to continue to keep up the momentum on the lower carbon piece and chase the successes as they come.
I'm always hopeful that we could have used that 60-day lifting of the sanction to at least show how moving some of those products in non-U.S. ships from Houston, where there is the energy, mm-hmm. to places where there's not the energy, i.e. California on the mm-hmm. one side, which is a difficult run, I get it, or the Northeast to the other side, that would be a really good template for the future to show how we can move some of those liquid energies mm-hmm. In non-American vessels and give more energy security to the people that really need it. Looking forward to that. I know y'all invested a lot of time here in hydrogen. You were kind of a very prominent hydrogen hub. By most measures, you're also the consumer of probably the most hydrogen in America, mm-hmm. I would guess. Mm-hmm. So industrial hydrogen is already very dominant here. But it would have to feel a little bit like, not a failure, but probably not one of your best moments in that hydrogen is clearly not quite as in favor as we thought it would be. What lessons have you learned from playing with hydrogen that you can apply later to attracting new technologies, which is always risky, but what lessons did you learn that you might apply?
So I think the takeaway there is just new value chain development is hard when we're talking about low carbon intensity hydrogen, regardless of whatever color you want to assign it to, but lower carbon intensity hydrogen, it's the cost is always the issue, right? Project economics for any of these things is the issue. And how do you, but it's not the only issue. It's also durable policy frameworks. And so when we, you know, set incentives in place and then kind of dial them back, and it creates more uncertainty and makes it harder for investment to take off. I think the big thing at the end of the day is that the demand that maybe we thought might have been there has not fully materialized, particularly in the international markets of Europe and Asia. And so those are places where we're continuing to plug along. We have inbound delegations frequently from all over the world, and we talk about a variety of things that Houston has to offer, including its energy products. So those are still things that we work to make progress on. I would say, you know, a lot can change in a couple years at the same time.
Absolutely.
So when we wrote our initial strategy, there were certain things that we really focused on, like hydrogen, carbon management, a variety of other technologies. I don't think we quite anticipated the liftoff that was going to happen in an enhanced geothermal. And so there were things that are in our original strategy that are not necessarily as emphasized today. But that's why you iterate, right? You talk with your members and say, what's changed in the last 6 to 12 months? Where do we need to be focused next? And for us right now, that's increasingly the power sector. It's continuing to sustain and build the momentum in carbon management, which includes things like hydrogen, but isn't limited to that. And then technology commercialization overall. I think generally, one of the things I was in a roundtable earlier this week, and folks kept talking about different incentives and federal policy issues and just these very narrow type issues. And one of the things we have to keep thinking about is how do we get beyond these just little slivers of incentives that pick one technology or another and move towards something that's truly technology neutral.
Yeah, and there's so many competing factors. I don't see a lot of the activity around nuclear power coming to Houston, but it's probably just because I don't read all the details. Are you active in the development of maybe the new types of nuclear power, SMRs, all the different technologies?
Mm-hmm. So I would say it's important to some of our members. It's not necessarily in the scope for everybody. It's a technology that's developing, it's growing, it's maturing, but we still got a long ways to go. This will be a slower play or a longer term play. For sure. That being said, there is a whole lot that's happening here in Texas. At the state level, we've developed a Texas Nuclear Fund. It's modeled a little bit off of the Texas Energy Fund, which was kind of in response to some of the reliability issues that we'd had in the ERCOT market following kind of severe weather. And we've got, you know, the governor's office has set up an office specifically focused on nuclear. There's new coalitions that are popping up. At the university level, there's lots of investment going in there. So Texas A&M University has put out a number of RFIs for advanced nuclear projects. Abilene Christian University has a partnership with Natura Resources. They're developing a research reactor, and they just got through their permitting approval process, if I'm not mistaken, with the NRC, which is a huge feat, or their initial permitting process. And then, you know, they're also developing a commercial reactor or on the path to do that too. And then closer to home, we've got X Energy partnering with Dow on their Seadrift site to develop advanced nuclear to support the lower carbon operations for their petrochemical facility. So I'd say there's a lot that's happening. It's just going to take some time for all of that to fully bear fruit.
Last question for you, and then we'll get into have a little bit of fun. But you're in a difficult position because we're thinking about innovation. We're thinking about a world that's quite different than the world we live in today. Yet you are the home of oil and gas. You are the home of petrochemicals. And they're a dominant voice in the economy, in your conversation. How do you balance their voice against perhaps bringing technologies into Houston that at one day may obsolete them? How do you balance that?
So I guess my thing with that is that I really don't think we're going to make any one resource obsolete. Mm-hmm. You know, in the time of human development, I think the only energy resource that we've really kind of gone away from, truly, is whale blubber, you know, using whale oil. And so for obvious reasons, right? But as population, if you look at any of the kind of big energy outlooks that get put out there, you know, ExxonMobil does one. A lot of the super majors make them. The IEA makes them too, although that one has had some set of issues in the past. All of those forecasts kind of show two key things. Number one, the growth of the global population. And number two, the advancement of that population, and that is going to take energy. Right. So I don't see that changing. At the same time, you know, it's finding the technologies that you're good at in Houston. For us, what are the areas where we're naturally have a competitive advantage because of geology, existing infrastructure, workforce capabilities, or decision-making authority that rests here in Houston, and then investing in those technologies.
That's a great answer. Okay, thanks. Now we want another great answer, because I'm going to hand you a magic wand. I'm going to allow you to use that wand one time in the next year for one thing that would have the biggest impact as you see in doing your job, but really in evoking a smooth energy transition to a more affordable, I'll use your words, more affordable, more sustainable environment.
Okay.
How would you use it?
Well, one, at the big picture level, I would say if we could develop a greater fascination with consensus and winning together, that would be hugely helpful. Because we have too many folks that are pulling in too many different directions, and it's just not helpful to the challenge that we're trying to solve. At the more local or micro level, I would say continuing to support the innovation ecosystem here at that full cradle of early stage entrepreneur to large incumbent adopting and developing a technology. And that is a key secret sauce that will pay dividends for years to come, in my view. And there's a couple of key ingredients to that. We intentionally invested in the ecosystem here a few years ago when Amazon announced that they were going to build a new second global headquarters, or HQ2, or whatever it was at the time. And we raised our hand, put together a proposal, spent a lot of time and energy on it. And the ultimate answer when they came back to us and said no was that they didn't feel like there was an innovation ecosystem or an entrepreneurial kind of hub here in Houston. And that failure really made us think through, okay, what do we need to do to change that?
Right.
And what we found is that there's a whole lot of innovation happening. It's just happening inside of a lot of our major companies, and right. It's hidden. And so Rice University developed with us and a number of other collaborators and stakeholders, including, you know, all of the university systems, really, an innovation district here in Houston. It's a large area of Rice-owned land that they've developed into the ION, and that we've brought in Greentown Labs and others. So how can we continue to help companies get through those various valleys of death and the innovation life cycle and continue to grow that ecosystem is my big piece.
Great use of the wand. Thank you. And as we look back over these over the years and even each year, the answers just make more and more sense when we listen to them, which is really nice. Before we go, anything else you want to tell our listeners about what you're doing, about the work of Hedy, or anything else exciting at CERAWeek in Houston?
So I think we touched on a lot of them. Innovation is one. Carbon management, how do we continue to sustain and build on the momentum? We've gotten some permitting reform wins there at the state level. And then the other big piece that we haven't touched on quite as much is power. That's an area where we're increasingly focused on how do we make sure we have affordable, reliable power that can meet large sources of industrial demand while also servicing the residents of this area. And if you look at the forecasts, it's going to be substantial growth, not as big as some of the forecasts say, but it'll be big, and we need to be ready for it in a meaningful way. And so we've had some policy moves at the state to make sure that we're thinking about this growth in the right way. A whole lot more I could talk about there, but one of the things we're going to be making sure we do is, regardless of what the source is, if it's AI, if it's data centers, if it's advanced manufacturing that we're working to reshore, we want to be the place where that grows, and we want to make it as easy as possible for a company to get to yes and say, yes, this is the place where I know I can reach scale and build my business. So we'll be doing a lot in that space this year.
That's great. Well, we will wish you the best of luck in your new role as
Thank you. Executive director.
And we'll be looking forward to following you and the Houston Energy Transition Initiative. Thanks for your time here in Houston on Path to Zero.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.